Creep It Real, the Alaskan podcast about the paranormal, fitness, and other favorite topics with your host, Jesse Desmond. All right, welcome to Creep It Real. I'm Jesse Desmond, coming at you from the Golden Heart City, Fairbanks, Alaska. This is episode 5, and it's all about UFOs in Alaska. I plan on going over a general timeline and mentioning some real key events that have happened. And I absolutely believe that there has not been enough research into the state of Alaska as a UFO hotspot. But first, let me mention that my podcast beverage of choice this morning. this is my first morning recording the podcast. So this morning it is a nice steaming hot cup of coffee from Bones Coffee, and it's called Mint Invaders from Chocolate Space. I'm a big fan of Bones Coffee. It kind of started out with me getting their Big Lebowski sort of type. It's like a white Russian flavored coffee, and of course it has like a skeleton that looks like the dude on it. And I've tried almost all their types of coffee. This Mint Invaders from Chocolate Space is brand new. It just came out I think about a month ago or something, and it's pretty good. I could probably go for a tiny bit more mint in it, but it's still pretty good. And if you do look into Bones Coffee, which is bonescoffee.com, sometimes in the summer they have like special, you know, they have like limited edition flavors. Last year they had the Shark Attack, and I really hope they bring that back. I really enjoyed that one. Okay. So in the last episode, I did talk about maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And so in that vein, since this episode's all about UFOs, I found 2 themed workouts from Derby. One's called Space Cowboy, the other one's called Stardust. You know, we're still kind of in quarantine, so if you are feeling the need of doing some home workouts or whatever, I'm going to post these 2 over on Facebook. Go ahead and check them out. If you do the workouts at level 1, which is 3 sets and 1 full page, that's 1 set. Then each one should take you 20 to 30 minutes. It's a good way to kind of get in a quick little workout there. So stay tuned. I'm going to cut to a brief commercial here, and then we're going to come back and I'm going to give you a little bit of history, just in a linear fashion, just kind of, I made a timeline. We're going to go over it about why Alaska is a UFO hotspot, and you know, and why this should inspire people to maybe look into it a little more, because there's been a lot that's gone on and a lot of people are just kind of oblivious to it. So we'll be right back. All right, so let's start our timeline with a little bit of Alaskan history. So Alaska, there used to be a land bridge across Bering Strait that would connect Alaska with what is now Siberia. And there's always been a lot of, you know, foot traffic, migration happening and stuff like that. There's been a lot of native settlements like all over the state. And it wasn't really until there's a little bit of debate. So apparently there's a thought that there was like a little bit of colonization by Russians in 1648, but Russians really didn't come over until like in droves until the 1700s. So you could say that in the 1700s, Russia really kind of made the move to come over, and they were like, wow, look at all these natural resources. So, and then they mainly settled along the coastlines and down in the panhandle. Let's see. So Alaska was purchased by the U.S., which was by the Secretary of State at the time, William Seward, and that was in 1884. So at that point, Alaska became a U.S. territory, and it wasn't until early 1959 that Alaska became an actual state. We became 49. And then later that year, Hawaii followed as the 50th state. So that's a little prehistory there for what we're talking about. So we are going to start in like the 1920s. And one thing that I like to do, because I'm a big paranormal nerd, is I scour those newspaper archives that are online in my spare time, and I collect newspaper reports on weird stuff. So I actually have my binder of just UFO and UFO space related newspaper clippings that I've printed out in front of me as I'm going through this. So if we start in 1920, because that's where things really seem to start, there are a few things before then, but it's pretty much just all reports of meteorites in the sky, and you know, falling stars and that sort of thing. And we have that all the way through the 20s. There are a few reports of mystery airships. Right now I'm looking at one that was, let's see here, this was around Juneau. And it was seen over Funter Bay. So I think this one turned out to be a monoplane, which is an early airplane. And this actually comes from 1916. So, you know, there are reports of that. Once airplanes kind of became a thing, Alaska just had them. Because it was an easier way to get around the state, because it's so freaking big. Okay. So there's not much going on in the 20s. In the 30s, I'm going to get a chair creak here. Okay, in the 30s, there were definite planes in the state. It became fairly common for bush pilots to be a thing, and some of the major airlines like Pan Am and stuff actually, you know, started coming up to Alaska in a few spots. So, you know, it just became a thing. In the 30s, that's when planes start disappearing. That's when you start getting a lot more, you know, mysterious, you know, we can't find these people kind of disappearances. If you are interested in the Alaska Triangle and people disappearing, I really urge you to start looking at the 1930s newspaper articles and just kind of go from there, just look for missing people and stuff, and you'll start finding it. There's actually my filing system here, it goes from the 1930s to the end of the 1940s in my binder here, and you get a lot of reports of meteors. There's also quite a collection of space-related articles that come out during this time about, you know, oh, if we send someone to the moon, you know, they're going to have to worry about, see here, they actually suggest to carry a better quality made stove because it might be colder, which seems kind of ridiculous now that we have been there. They've talked about, you know, life on Mars, and they've noticed things because the telescopes, the quality of them were getting better. So, they were noticing more things on Mars and the moon and Venus. Those are the three big ones that they were constantly plugging in the papers. Let's see here. Okay. In the 1940s. Okay. It's pretty important to mention that, in June 1942, so we're still in the middle of World War II at this point, the Forgotten Battle happened in Alaska. And if you are familiar with Deadliest Catch or any other show that kind of takes place out in the middle of nowhere, out on Alaska's oceans, the Forgotten Battle happened out around the islands of Attu and Kiska, which are out on the Aleutian Chain there. And like the waters out there are crazy, crazy terrible and super cold, and you really don't want to be out there. But the Japanese did send over a small invasion force, and they actually landed in Alaska. Most people, I don't know, they might mention it a little bit, but they kind of skim over it because really Alaska wasn't a state at that point. We were simply a territory. But that kind of ended in August 1943. So, you know, it was a battle for about a year. But they really set up a lot of naval forces, and I think there's Navy and Air Force down that way or something. I'd have to go back through and double check on that. Anyway, I know there was boats and planes. But because there were a lot of boats out that way, due to World War II, there were 4 Foo Fighter sightings in, you know, Alaska airspace. So the first one happened April 30th, 1943. There was a sighting of 4 linearly arranged red lights over the Bering Sea from the USS Williamson, excuse me, which is a destroyer ship, and that was by the captain and some crew members. Let me take a sip of my delicious coffee. Okay. The next one happened in July 1945. There was a mysterious object spotted from the deck of the Delaroff, which is a U.S. Army transport ship, and it was on its way from Alaska down to Seattle, and that mysterious object was seen by at least 14 crewmen. In August 1947, at Fort Richardson, which is here in Alaska, 2 officers reported seeing a spherical object that was about 10 feet in diameter flying through the air at super fast speeds, and there was no vapor trail. And let's see here, the last one is July 1949. There was a disc seen over Fairbanks by a survey crew. So those were all reported as being Foo Fighters in the sky. Okay. So let's see here. There were some explained missing airplanes I don't want to be that person who's like, oh, every missing airplane is unexplained. So like in 1947, there was a Pan Am DC-4 flight of 923 that went missing around Ketchikan, and it was later found to have crashed into Tamgis Mountain, and it killed all 18 crew and passengers aboard. But they couldn't find it for quite a while. Okay. And also, that's the year that the Roswell crash happens. Okay. 1950. I know I'm flying through these. I'm sorry. It's morning and I have some things I have to get done today. Okay. So, 1950. In 1950, there was a movie that came out called The Flying Saucer, and that it's a B movie. It's a sci-fi movie. Obviously, it's about flying saucers. It also is about kind of mixes in the CIA and KGB. It was produced, directed, written, and starred with Mikhail Conrad, and he actually wrote the original story, and the story was rewritten for film by Howard Irving Young, who had a long history of screenwriting. This film was filmed in California and on site in Alaska. So if they say that they're in Alaska and you see totem poles and stuff like that, that's actual B-roll that they filmed up here. And I think they filmed around the Juneau area. Let's see here. Okay, so according to an article that came out on September 21st, 1949, in the LA Examiner, Mikhail Conrad claimed that he had obtained actual footage of flying saucers while shooting a different movie, Arctic Manhunt, in Alaska during the winter of 1947, and he said that that's what he based his UFOs on for this movie of The Flying Saucer. Some people think that it's a hoax. He was just trying to get people to watch his movie, but it's still a mystery. No one is 100% sure on it. Okay, let's see here. I have some actual news articles flagged. Okay, so this one comes from January 3rd, 1950. It said, flying saucer seen by a local man. Let me pull it out of here. Jorgen Mortensen. Let me start that again. Jorgen Mortensen, well-known retired fisherman residing at Jamestown Bay, contributes his experience with a flying saucer in the following letter. By the latest Sentinel, I see that flying saucers are still in the news. Why should Sitka not have a little to say about them, especially when it is true? About a year and a half ago, while outside my cabin at Jamestown Bay, I happened to look up towards Silver Bay, and there I saw a flying saucer. It was very bright and shone in the sunshine. Sorry, the font is really tiny. It was quite high in the sky. There were a few scattering clouds, and a flying object disappeared behind one of them. I am positively not mistaken. I saw it. Wait. I am positive. Oh, gosh. I am positively not mistaken. I saw it, but did not mention it, as I thought people would think that I'm a little off. Maybe they would start a story about the old fellow that's got saucers on his head. All right, so there's another one here. This is from August 1955. It mentions that an Anchorage photographer captured a picture of a UFO, and the Air Force couldn't explain it. The 50s, my 50s file is really super thick. There's another one spotted, 56, over Petersburg. This is really cool. December 2nd, 1957, a piece of Sputnik came down around Fort Greely, and I don't know what exactly happened to it after Fort Greeley got a hold of it, but that happened. The 1950s is really it's really important when it comes to UFO research in Alaska. This is when Project Pinball was put in place. Project Pinball, it's relatively little a little known project where they were trying to use the Air Force was trying to use radar sites to kind of see if they could track UFOs over Alaska airspace. And thanks to a little bit of research done by CUFOS, which is the Center of UFO Studies, they had some research that they had pulled and posted online about kind of like a training session almost. And one of the classes that the people had to sit through for the 5,000 first, I want to say it's 5,000 first, AISS at that point, was actually a, you know, just, it was all about UFOs. They had a separate class that the intelligence people took for, like foreign aircraft and stuff like that from Russia and probably Canada and stuff. They had one specifically for UFOs, which I found really interesting. But there wasn't a whole lot of information. But they did actually in that bit of information from CUFOS, they had some reported sightings of just weird stuff. Weird stuff. Anyway, I'm still looking into that, and I will probably end up having a show specifically on Project Pinball. If anyone has any information, I would totally be interested in learning more about it. Okay, so let's continue. So in 1955, WACS began installation. That is the White Alice Communication System, and they ended up installing 80 different radar sites. In 1957, the Dew Line began installations, and the Dew Line was a distant early warning line of radars, and I believe that one went across the top of the state. Yeah, White Alice was a little more like went along the Aleutian Chain and across the state, and then I think Dew Line went kind of over the top of the state. And then there was BMUs that got set up. Oh, they began construction in 1958, but it really wasn't operational until 1961. And that's oh gosh, that is like ballistic missile early warning system, something like that. That one was a little more aggressive because they had missiles. So that became those got set up and became a thing. So if you are familiar with Linda Moulton Howe's research into the Alaska Pyramid or the Dark Pyramid or the Black Pyramid, it's supposed to be this pyramid that's underground somewhere, kind of out in western Alaska somewhere, and there are no roads out there. You can't just drive to it. Otherwise, people would be out there looking. This kind of falls in line with that because, like, the White Owl's communication system, that was run by Western Electric, and one of Linda Moulton Howe's early interviews was with someone who was about someone who worked for Western Electric, who was sent out to the pyramid as a site that they had to go and do something with. They went inside the pyramid and actually gave an idea of how far down they'd have to go and how far out it was from the central point to one of the corners where I guess there was electrical something that they had to work on. So that starts getting tied in. Project Pinball was simply from 1950 to 1959. And right after that, we start getting pyramid stuff. Sightings just kind of explode by the 60s. I mean, there's a lot over the, during the 50s as well. But in the 60s, it really took off. Let's see here. I know people are going to be like, oh, the Douglas aircraft. Because a lot of people, it's an aircraft that disappeared with a lot on board. That happened in 1963. There was a lot of other stuff that happened in 1963 that usually gets overlooked. Or not 1963, I'm sorry. In the 1960s, that gets overlooked. They were planning on... The university was starting to take off due to the research and stuff that was going on. And so in 1968, the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks decided that they wanted to set up a research range for rockets. And so that's called Poker Flats Research Range. It is ongoing to this day, and they actually occasionally they'll have tours in case anyone's interested. And one of their first projects that they came up with in 1968 was to launch 6 barium release rockets that the Department of Defense had, and to study the effects of that over Alaska airspace. So let's see here. That's if you ever want to go see rockets being launched, I think it's the northernmost rocket research range in the world or something like that. It has some kind of record like that. But the 60s was super abundant. If you start going through all the Fairbanks papers in the 60s, you start noticing that there was a researcher here in Fairbanks named Isabel Purdy, and she would have regular UFO meetings. She always posted meeting dates and stuff in the newspaper. And there was also, I saw a few advertisements for different UFO groups, starting to pop up and stuff in the later 60s and mostly in the 70s about, if you have a UFO sighting, report it to this group, that sort of thing. Okay, so in the 70s, there was still a UFO craze going on, but with the university really, they got a lot of money. They got a lot of money. They built a lot more stuff. And so then everything became science. And everyone was like, oh, let us explain away these UFOs with science. And there was a lot of that. There was still some interesting things that happened. There was some mysterious caribou deaths, and in the letters to the editor in 1972, Isabel Purdy wrote in and said, "Hey, I'm interested in this caribou mystery. Can someone send me some more information?" So, let's see here. Sorry for the 70s. I really was not sure what I was going to talk about. All right. Oh, here we go. All right. So this story comes from May 17th, 1974. It says, "Local woman reports bright red UFO here. A Fairbanks woman says she saw an unidentified flying object go over her residence at Johnston Subdivision Wednesday evening. Isabel Purdy of," I'll keep that blank, "said she saw the object about 7:30 p.m. as it flew low over her house and disappeared behind the trees. Purdy said the object was about 6 feet wide and 20 feet long and painted bright red. She said she saw flames shoot out from the back like a jet exhaust, but heard no noise. She said she ran to the window to see the object because she felt its presence, although she heard no sound. She said she had just returned from shooting practice when the event occurred. Purdy said the object definitely was not an aircraft. I'm familiar with them, she said. I live in the flight pattern of the Fairbanks International Airport, and those planes shake my house every time they go over. It was traveling at a tremendous speed, she said. I have seen UFOs before. In fact, I'm writing a book about my experiences with them." All right. So, due to that last sentence, I looked online and I have not been able to find a book by Isabel Purdy. And I don't know when it would have come out, if it would have come out in the 70s or later on in the 80s or something. There's sites all throughout the 70s like that, you know, where there's bright red UFOs are a thing up here. I've heard of glowing orange spheres up here as being a popular one. Lots of silent black triangle shaped craft. Not so much the triangular craft with the three lights on the bottom. Sometimes we get reports of that, but these are more like no lights, kind of a longer triangle, almost like a Star Destroyer from Star Wars, like that kind of longer triangular shape, but completely black, and there's no lights and they make no noise. And a lot of times when you see them flying, it's like a cloudless night, and you see them move only because they move and they block certain things out in the sky that are higher up than it. So I've seen that a number of times. I know other people that have seen that sort of thing. Let's see. We can move. Oh, you know, there's, if you have ever seen the show that I am in, it's called The Alaska Triangle, and it's on the Travel Channel, and I think new episodes come out on Sundays for that. You'll hear me talk about this weird animal mutilation case that I came across. This actually came out of a UFO magazine, and there was an article by John Love. It came out in the December issue of 1978. And there's this crazy story about these group of hikers, these grad students that were out hiking around Eagle, Alaska, which is kind of over by the Canadian border. And they weren't in Eagle, Alaska. They were outside of Eagle. There's a lot of hills and mountains and stuff in that area. So they're out hiking around, and one of them woke up earlier than the others, looked up and saw a bunch of UFOs in the sky, and noticed that one, they were kind of camping on a ridge. So he looked down and there was one that was lifting up from the ground, and he woke up the others. And of course, when he did that, like, the UFOs were pretty much gone, and said, "Guys, we're going to go hike down there and take a look, see what was, you know, see what that one UFO that was coming up, like, what that was down there doing." So they spent a whole day. They walked down and they found this circular area where there's a lot of brush up here, and tundra foliage, and not a lot of huge trees sometimes. And so there was like a circular swirly pattern, you know, and there was four triangular indentations where like maybe feet came down to support the craft. But they found grizzly bear carcasses. They found like an actual bear, and then they found like a cub, right? It's like a baby bear. They found, let's see here, they found some moose carcasses. They found caribou. They found elk. And now, if you are familiar with Alaska, elk is not super native to the state. There are two locations where you can find elk, and those elk, I believe one is native to Kodiak, or maybe it was transplanted there a long time ago. And then the other one is kind of in a specific area, and it doesn't really travel outside that area. And that was put there. That's the Roosevelt elk, classic elk. And it's just in one specific spot. None of this is up by Eagle. And so the presence of elk in this area is kind of strange. There was also a 14-foot whale carcass. Now, if you don't know where Eagle, Alaska is, you can go onto Google Earth or Google Maps and, you know, type in Eagle, Alaska, and you'll see that it's a small little community out in the middle of nowhere. It's about 400 miles away from the ocean, and there's a lot of mountains in between. And it's, you know, it's just kind of, there's a lot of space in between, and it's not easy to haul a 14-foot whale anywhere, much less 400 miles into the middle of the woods. Let's see here, what else? Oh, there was angel hair was found at the site as well, and that's like this white filament stuff, and a lot of people have tried to collect it, but a lot of times when it's collected, it disintegrates. So they weren't able to really collect that so well. Excuse me. There were, let's see here. Let me see if I can find the details on this. Okay, so one of these guys, he was a grad student at Columbia University, and they found some weird rocks with some weird writing on it. And this guy he's actually a geologist grad student. And so he collected those. And as they, you know, once they reached a site and were kind of horrified by it, they decided to pack up for the summer and just kind of go back to wherever they came from. And so this one geologist grad student decided that he was going to take these rocks back to Columbia and take a closer look at them. And they kind of disappeared at the airport, somewhere at the airport. They were intercepted. So kind of an interesting story. If you want more details on that, I guess you could always go check out the Alaska Triangle on the Travel Channel. And I forget which episodes I'm in, but I'm sure you can figure that out. Let's see here. Let's move on to the 80s. The 80s, there's actually quite a few sightings in the 80s. The most popular of these is, of course, Flight JAL 1628. That's Japanese Airlines 1628. It's a cargo flight. So there were only three people on board. That was the pilot, the co-pilot, and the navigator. And they were flying from Paris. I think they stopped at Iceland. And then they kind of came over the top of the world. And they were going to refuel in Anchorage and then continue on to Tokyo. And they were carrying wine, which, I don't know, some people put emphasis on that, and I could really care less what the cargo was in this case. So what happened was on November 17th, 1986, as soon as they kind of came into Alaska airspace, the pilot, this guy, he had 10,000 or over 10,000 hours of flight time under his belt. So this guy's like pretty vetted as pilot. And I believe he had been in the Korean War in the military as a pilot for the Korean War or something too. So this guy had been flying for quite a while. He was, you could call him like a almost retired pilot, I guess, at that point. I think he retired actually in the 90s or something. Anyway, so they came into Alaska airspace and he noticed that there were two weird UFO things kind of flying around, but they were flying way too close, and they'd fly like underneath and over the top of the cargo plane, and then they'd kind of fly all around, and they were moving like really super fast in really strange ways. And so he reported it, and the reason this is a big case is because it was picked up not only by military radar but also by civilian radar. The FAA was picking it up on their big state radar system. And, you know, they kind of got towards Fairbanks. And there was this big mothership. And it was supposed to be the size, it's kind of walnut shaped. And it was like super, super huge and dwarfed their aircraft. And they didn't know what to do. So they kind of kept it in view. And they got permission to do kind of this loop-de-loop, kind of an evasive maneuver sort of action, because they didn't know what this thing wanted. And then Anchorage told them to continue on their path down to Anchorage. Don't return to Fairbanks. Like, just keep coming down to Anchorage. And they grounded them once they hit Anchorage. And that's kind of when... That's kind of when the news broke to everyone. I want to say it was John Callahan is the guy's name who, let me just double check here. Sarah, there's that guy. It's always when you want to double check something that you can't just find something real fast. Is that always how it goes? Carnahan, maybe? I don't know. Oh gosh. I always have notes with me, so I'm really bad at remembering stuff sometimes. Well, you know what? I'm not finding the name. I know kind of what it sounds like. Right? Something like that. he was the main investigator. He came up from DC to investigate everything. And he, you know, basically what happened was the FAA was like, no, say it was something else. And this guy could not figure out what exactly was going on with this incident. And I mean, this guy was not crazy. He was an experienced pilot. The other guys in the cab there in the plane, they had witnessed it as well, and it was like a really big mystery. And then on top of all of this, of course you get people saying, oh, they saw the planet Jupiter. That's real big, right? Jupiter's not real big from the planet Earth. So I don't know how that made its way into the papers, but it did. You know, there's all kinds of theories, but what happened was the FAA released a whole packet of information. And so I found all that and I downloaded it, printed it out, and it takes up like three huge binders of space. And it's just information and inquiries and all kinds of stuff regarding JAL 1628. So if you are interested in that, I think I found it through the Library of Congress. You can go do your own research and do that. I do want to point out that this is the incident that gives us Alaska UFO Day on November 17th. This is the reason for that. All right, I'm going to take a quick little break here because I want to drink some coffee, and then we'll cover the 90s and present. So stay tuned. All right, so I have a fresh cup of coffee and I grabbed this thing that I made over last weekend. I'm almost done with my batch. They're called Yeti Bars. And I will probably post the recipe for these on Facebook. They're really good. They have ginger and goji berries. And of course, a little bit of Himalayan pink salt. And they're completely paleo. And I don't know, sometimes I like to have themed food. So, It's kind of dumb, but they're good. They're delicious. This is my breakfast this morning. All right, so let's see here. Okay, so before I get into the 90s, I kind of spaced out. I was going to mention that I got word through the grapevine of research that in the late 80s, the military went in, and that's when they kind of shut down the pyramid, the Alaska Pyramid, Dark Pyramid, whatever, the underground pyramid thing. They what that means is they went to the site, and they, you know, there's supposed to be like a fenced area and like a motor. What do they call that? It's like a big garage, basically. They removed all that. They removed all that and made it look like no one was there. Or at least they tried to. They did the same thing with all the Nike missile sites and stuff like that. And around Fairbanks, and I grew up in North Pole, we had a lot of sites like that that, you know, people just kind of, at this point, they just kind of go out there, and that's where they, you know, ride four-wheelers and snow machine, and I don't know, just they're usually big empty lots at this point, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And the one that I live by, the pipeline kind of bisected the road, so the road to get out. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's everything's melting around here, and with the willows have the pussy willows on them now, and so I have like a constant eye twitch, and it's really kind of starting to affect my. It's just starting to affect me. Seasonal allergies, so fun. Okay, so yeah, so to get to that Nike site that I was talking about, we could just walk from our house, but you'd have to go through the woods, and it was like 2 miles down this old dirt road, and pipeline was bisecting it. So anyway, those kind of things are all around here. okay, so let's move into the 90s, because that's kind of what I was hoping to do. 90s. So let me flip to the 90s in my book, right there. Okay. In 1991, the Alaska Aerospace Corporation was created, and that they started setting up shop at that point. I think it took a while for them to actually build everything that they needed for their facility. And they set up shop on Narrow Cape, which is on Kodiak Island. If you look at a big map of Alaska, there's big old islands kind of in the Gulf, and it's kind of southwest a little bit of Anchorage. that's Kodiak, and lots of bears there. I haven't been there myself. I definitely wouldn't want to camp there, and I've heard a lot of stories of bears just kind of strolling into town. Not a place where I'd want to have a dog. Anyway, since 1998, or between 1998 and 2015, this is according to their website, they had at least 17 rocket launches happen. And these guys are sending up like huge rockets into space. On their website, they even had they said that a lot of times their rockets are like 18 stories tall and stuff. That's just like, that's kind of crazy. That's pretty massive, if you ask me. They do offer the occasional tour. Of course, now that COVID-19 is going on, they have no tours right at the moment. But you can always check out their website. It is akaerospace.com. And I'll link that over on Facebook as well, so you can check that out. You are allowed to go hike around the land that's around the facility. Their facility is fenced off, you know. But you can go hike around and take pictures and maybe even take a tour. Another thing that happened in the 90s is 1993. The Air Force, the Navy, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and DARPA kind of got together and formed HARP. This is a pretty big one. It's a high frequency active oral research program. So HAARP. And it was, its original purpose was to analyze the ionosphere and investigate the potential for developing ionospheric enhancement technology for radio communications and surveillance. There's a lot of conspiracy with HARP. There still is, you know, to this day. Let's see here. When was that? 2015 is when HARP was transferred. They had shut down HARP for a while, and they transferred ownership to the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So they were able to reopen, and they've been doing their own thing. Some of the reasons why there's a lot of conspiracy in regards to HARP is if you look at the original documents, military projects documents, which are available online, you can find that they were interested in weather, like being able to change the weather and utilizing the project as like a defense weapon or something like that. Let's see here. So weather control, maybe even having power outages, you know, like strategic power outages or something, or causing them remotely. Let's see, what else? Right now there's been a constant hum, like a kind of a lower hum. It kind of sounds like a road cleaning truck, or maybe something grading, or something down in Anchorage. And there's a whole Facebook group about it, and I believe it's like the Trumpets of Anchorage, or let me check this out. Trumpets, Strange Sounds, Anchorage, Alaska. That's the group. You know, it's theorized that it could be doing that. Oh gosh, what else? I don't know. I'm sure that there's some other stuff, and I'm just not remembering everything. Nick Begich Jr. Has written a number of books about this, and he's been on Coast to Coast AM, and along with a lot of other programs, discussing HAARP, because not everything adds up, and I'm not really sure myself. I know Jesse Ventura went out that way, to try and figure out HAARP stuff as well, and he taped it, and I think it's an episode on some show that he had at the time, which remember watching, but I don't remember what it's called. HAARP right now is run by the university, and they actually have really cool Area 49 glasses and shirts and hoodies and stuff that you can get with a really cool logo for it. They have offered tours, and they have like a lecture with a Q&A the night before the tour, and you know, they take you right into that huge array that they have, like the really large one that's really popular. I was really surprised when I went there the first year that they had the tours available, because they, you know, you see pictures of it and you don't realize how big it is until you're standing there, and it's just like this massive antenna array, and they have like these old echo units that they have their stuff stored in at the base. I think it connects like six of them together or something. It's pretty incredible, the size of it. And they, of course, they have it turned off when they have tours. But they're willing to answer any questions. But you will get laughed at if you ask some of the more conspiracy kind of things. So let's see, what else happened in the 90s? In the 90s, there was still a lot of UFOs being reported in the news. Lots of meteorites being mentioned in the news as well. Let's see here. There's a lot more talk about actual space technology and what was going on, what was being launched and that sort of thing. Which is kind of cool, because, you know, I guess you don't always hear about that kind of stuff in local news, unless you're like in, I don't know, some state with a lot of NASA stuff going on. And we do have some NASA research going on up here, but it's not really mentioned in the news hardly ever. So let's see here. 2000s were pretty quiet. Let's see here. What day is this? This is October 20th, 2003 from the Anchorage Daily News. There was some weird mystery force is what how they have it written in here, that flattened trees around Ruby, Alaska. The Ruby is about 200 miles west of Fairbanks. And there was just, apparently they don't know what exactly happened. But they said it kind of looks like tornado force winds had flattened trees around Ruby. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that happened in the early 2000s. Let's see here. Oh, well, I guess in 2009, the movie Fourth Kind came out, and there were some questions about that. Because in the movie, if you've seen it, it has Mila Jovovich in it, and it takes place out in Nome with these abductions. And it's funny because I know people from Nome who lived there during the supposed time when this is supposed to happen, and they're like, we never heard anything. As it turned, and then they had like this footage of supposedly the lady in court or whatever. And I believe it's all fake. I haven't been able to find anything to prove that it's not fake. and if it is true, please write in and let me know. And because I did look into that because I was like, oh, that's a weird one. Why haven't I heard about this? Yeah, it's... Sorry, folks. Sorry to burst that bubble. It's not real. Okay, moving on to 2010 and forward. Alaska got blamed for some crop losses over in Russia because of HAARP. let's see here. HAARP opened up and they started having regular tours again. There's a real nice write up about it on September 6th, 2015, and yeah, it's being open for business. HAARP. It's all HAARP from there on. Yep. So that's a real, real super brief overview of UFOs in Alaska. So I don't know what you want to make of that. There's a lot of science. There's a lot of military presence. There are continual sightings, even though they're not always reported in the paper nowadays. It'd be interesting to see more research done for Alaska, simply because if you go look for UFOs, like UFO Alaska research, there's not a lot out there. You know, so I'd like to see more. Okay, so that's about it for this episode. I'm sorry that it was kind of half-assed. This last week was pretty crazy with work, and I don't know, I just couldn't get like my mind wrapped around stuff, and I don't know, I had allergies going on as well. Anyway, the next episode. I'm not sure what I'm doing yet. I will come up with something. I'd love to hear more. I'd love to hear stories from listeners. So send in your stories, especially if they're Alaskan. And I guess we'll go from there. Also, if you like to cook, as I do, and you have your own paranormal themed food creations, I would like to know about it. So send me like a picture and a recipe and all that kind of stuff. You can find all my contact information in the podcast description. And again, over on Facebook, the Facebook page is, you can search for it. It's Creep It Real Podcast. And yeah, looks like I have more listeners this time around. So I hope that keeps growing, because I kind of enjoy doing this. It's fun, and it gives me something to do. Definitely. Anyway, keep your eyes open on Facebook, because I will announce what the next show episode is going to be about. Hey, you can listen to Creep It Real through anchor.fm or stream it through Spotify, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Overcast, and Pocket Cast. Stay up to date with new episodes and look for submission calls on Facebook. You can share something with the podcast, like a sighting or a photo, a video clip, or even just a question or comment. Go ahead and send that in. And contact information is in the podcast description. You can send in a voicemail through anchor.fm, and you can send me a private message through Facebook. If you're a fan of Bigfoot, you should check out Beans Baxter's podcast called The Last Squatch. It's over on Podbean, and he broadcasts out of Homer, Alaska. So that's alasquatch.podbean.com. I will link to this in the description, the podcast description, and over on Facebook. I always do. He's just a friend of mine who does a lot of Bigfoot research. And are you feeling a need to explore Alaska yourself? Well, check out my latest book over on Amazon. It's called The Interior Alaska Alternative Travel Guide, and it has paranormal places, weird destinations, really cool local spots to visit, and it's all based on the interior of Alaska. I even include a list of locally roasted coffee, because that is a big thing for us up here, local breweries and distilleries, and it's really cool. Really great places to hike. I list them. All right. Well, have a good night and creep it real.